is I, the Grizzly. And welcome to your favorite African storytelling podcast, Tales from the Hearth, where we tell you paranormal African stories. This is episode 5. You must like them. As a reminder, you can send us an email at talesfromthehearth@gmail.com and also visit Twitter to hang out with us. Check the description for more details. This week, we have 2 eerie stories. Pay attention. Strangers are a blessing. Strangers are a curse. Choose your stranger carefully, or else. We start this episode today with a story called A Cryptic Something. Something about the midwife made Uche uncomfortable. This was her 3rd meeting with the midwife, yet she couldn't seem to find comfort in her company despite huge savior role she was playing in her life. She held her breath as she felt her gown being lifted to her thighs. She didn't even know that the elderly midwife was between her legs till she felt a cold metal object slip in between her most intimate place. The object was removed and replaced with the poking and prodding fingers. It was most uncomfortable, and she tried not to squirm on the flat bed. Uche wished she could see what the midwife was doing, but her past experience with the woman deterred her from doing so. She waited till the midwife finished whatever she was doing down there before speaking.
"Is everything all right?"
The midwife, who was washing her hands in a blue plastic bowl, glanced at Uche and frowned as she responded.
"Did I say anything was wrong?"
No. Uche stuttered quickly as she sat up on the bed and straightened her gown. She had so many questions, but knew it was better to keep quiet and wait for further instruction from the midwife. This was her first pregnancy after 12 years of being married. She was in her last trimester. In fact, her due date was in 2 weeks, and since she's come this far, after months of burning incense, reading psalms, drinking foul-smelling liquid, and bathing in cold river monthly. She was willing to endure more till her baby's delivered. If anyone had told Uche that at some point in her life, she would resort to fertility, spiritual homes, and midwives who double as prophetess, she would have laughed at the person's ignorance of her ideals. She had met the midwife in a strange circumstance, which she had come to consider as divine. One late Sunday evening, while taking her daily solitary stroll on her street, an elderly woman had bumped into her, and if not that Uche reflexes had been quick enough, the poor woman would have ended up in the dirty gutter. After apologizing to the elderly woman, even though she'd been the one bumped into, Uche turned on her heels to walk away, but felt a hand grip her wrist and stop her. It was the elderly woman. Uche was taken back when the woman drew close to her and pressed her right palm on Uche's stomach. Just as Uche was about to protest the rude intrusion, the woman spoke in a measured tone.
"Your womb is hot. I felt it when you touched me. Hot wombs can carry a child. How many miscarriages have you had?"
"What?" A shocked Uche had squeaked.
"I can help you. I am a certified midwife, and I have helped many barren women become pregnant. Forgive me. I am known as Prophetess Martha, of God's Power Fertility Home.
A fertility clinic? Uche's skeptic tone was not lost on the woman who had smiled rarely before responding.
Yes, a special clinic for women like you looking for a child. You are destined to be the mother of a special child, and I must help you.
The elderly woman had gripped Uche's hands as she had said the last part. The elderly woman offered her phone number to Uche, who, out of politeness, saved it on her phone as the woman looked on. Months passed and Uche forgot all about her encounter with the elderly woman. The day she frantically searched for the woman's phone number on her phone was the day she saw the phone chats between her husband and his mother. Her mother-in-law was mounting pressure on her son to take a second wife, or better still, divorce Uche. That day, a tearful and frantic Uche had called up the prophetess, come midwife, and requested a consultation. After a series of unorthodox tests, potion drinking, and prayer sessions, Uche took in. Everyone, including her mother-in-law, were deliciously happy. To sustain the pregnancy, Uche was subjected to other unorthodox procedures, which she hid from her husband. The night she spent bathing in the river was explained away as night church prayer sessions. The due date for Uche's delivery came and passed without any sign of labor pains. At first, Uche wasn't worried because the midwife had assured her that it was quite normal to have a post-term pregnancy. 1 month passed and no sign of labor pains. By this time, Uche had stopped going out. She was distressed with the comments and side glances she got from people who knew her. Her mother-in-law had also begun to make side comments about her. In her 11th month, the week her husband was out of town on a conference, Uche got a call from the midwife who told her to pack her delivery bag and head straight to the fertility home. It was time to induce labor. At exactly 3 a.m., Uche gave one final push and heard the shrill cry of a baby as she fainted. Some minutes later, Uche opened her eyes and felt the room swirl as she tried to raise herself on her elbows. It had been a difficult labor, and she was exhausted. As she tried to focus on her baby and the midwife at the center of the room, she noticed other figures in the room. People, strangers all dressed in white gowns. They were gathered around the midwife and her baby. Panic set in. Who were they? What were they doing in the labor room? Why were they chanting in low tones? Why was her baby no longer crying? 100 questions ran through her mind.
My baby,
she whispered in an exhausted tone, but was heard nonetheless because the midwife and the strangers looked sharply at her. A bewildered Uche saw the figures, the people fade away before her very eyes, like a wisp of smoke. Had she imagined them? She wondered.
Who were?
Uche blurted out as the midwife walked towards her bed with the baby in her arms. The midwife ignored her question and instead said,
"You are finally awake. Glad you could join us. You have such a special child. You are one lucky woman."
Uche reached out and gently took the baby from the woman's outstretched arms. Her baby smelled so nice. Had she been out for that long? She wondered, as she smiled at the midwife before gazing down at her baby. The eyes that looked up at her were not eyes that belonged to a child, much less a newborn baby. A confused Uche blinked, and sure enough, the form in her arms was that of a newborn child, but the eyes were... Lord. The baby had smiled and revealed what was a full set of teeth. A full set of teeth on a newborn child. It was a frightened Uche who glanced up to meet the eyes of the prophetess come midwife. She smiled broadly at Uche as she asked, "She is beautiful, isn't she?" Stories are heard, stories are true, stories are written, stories are false. This next tale is titled, The Account of James Winthrop. Do you remember the folklore about the beautiful daughter of a king who had rejected all the suitors who came to ask for her hand in marriage, but instead married and eloped with the handsome stranger she met at the market? You remember that the handsome stranger turned out to be a hideous beast who had killed different men and had worn their skin to appear human. A handsome human. You remember that the princess ran away when she discovered his deceit, and as she ran, he chased after her till she got to the boundary of the living and the dead, where he stretched his hand to grab her, but instead raked a long, sharp fingernail along her back. This is all you know about that story, but there is more. Just like every folklore which has been orally passed down from generation to generation, there is some fact hidden in this story. During my research in the validity of African folklores, I came across a note in the archives which suggested that the story which we all know to be folklore may not actually be accurate and complete. The anthropologist named James Winthrop had mentioned coming across a village in the present eastern Nigeria. The village was surrounded with high walls made from mud, bamboo sticks, and palm fronds. The walls had markings which were quite unusual from the ones he'd seen in other villages. According to James Winthrop, the menacing-looking men at the entrance gate had regarded him with curiosity before taking him to the man whom he figured was a high chief. At first, James had been treated with suspicion, but that soon turned to curiosity, and when they realized he posed no harm, they treated him and his interpreter like guests. This afforded James the opportunity to mingle and interact with the community, despite the language barrier. While in the village, he noticed there was a particular hut built farther away from the rest of the huts. It was impossible to miss because the hut was surrounded by flaming sticks which never went off. Intrigued by this, James had asked his interpreter to find out who lived in the hut and why it had flaming torches surrounding it. James recorded that his interpreter had told him that the hut was out of bounds. Some teenage daughter of a chief lived in the hut, and the flaming fire kept out humans as well as spirits. A further inquiry by the interpreter revealed that a year ago, The daughter of the chief had disappeared after she'd gone to fetch water from the stream. It had been assumed that she was kidnapped by some slave trader. For that reason, the wall was set up to protect the villagers. Then, one stormy night, the guards at the gate found a pregnant girl clawing at the gate in agony. Despite her disheveled appearance, bloated stomach, and a bloodied wound along her spine, the girl was soon recognized as the daughter of the chief who had disappeared several moons ago. At first, she had been taken to her mother's hut, and a Dibia summoned to attend to her. That night, the villagers gathered around the girl's mother's hut to catch a glimpse of the girl, but a piercing scream emanating from the said hut sent everyone scampering home. After that night, a hut was quickly erected for the girl, and she was separated from the rest of the village. Every now and then, a piercing scream would be heard from the hut. No one dared to go close, despite the uneasiness felt by everyone. The story piqued James Winthrop's curiosity, so he made plans to find a way into the hut and see the pregnant girl for himself. He deduced that by now the girl must have been put to bed. He wondered what had happened to her baby. Unfortunately for James Winthrop, his opportunity came on a rainy night when he was feverish with what we now call malaria. Earlier that day, a healer Dibia had prepared some leafy concoctions for him to chew and swallow. James described it as the most horrible medicine he'd ever had to take in his 53 years of existence. When he woke at midnight, he realized that it was a perfect opportunity for him since the rain was still raging on and every light blown out. A feverish but determined James left his hut and walked stealthily toward the hut, whose fires burned bright and fiery despite the heavy rainfall. As he approached the hut, he felt the ears on his body and head singed from the fire and smoke. Looking around for guards and finding none, James had crouched low and quickly slipped through two flaming torches. In his notes, James stated, "I noticed a stillness in the air as I crept up the window of the hut. The flaming torches outside illuminated everywhere, including inside the hut. With a throbbing headache, I slowly rose to peer into the room. It was some seconds before my brain told me what I was looking at. There was a petite, nude, bent and misshapen figure lying in a fetal position on a bamboo bed. It was the girl. Her back was facing me, and I could see her spine exposed through the gaping, bloodied slit on her back. Suddenly, the girl groaned. Then I saw her twist herself as she tried to readjust her position on the bed. Her agonized groan and the cracking sound which came with it left me horrified. Surely, it can be her spine making that sound as she turned. I had wondered, and still wonder. When she fully turned towards me, I could see it. Her bloated stomach. Whatever was inside her must be a baby bigger than her. I wondered how she was still alive and what in hell was inside her stomach. Definitely not human, child. And as if to confirm my thoughts, her groan had intensified and I saw her stomach move in different directions. It was as if whatever was inside the poor girl wanted to come out or was stretching itself inside her. It was a blood-curdling scream
which did it for me. I fled back to my hut, not caring if anyone heard my footsteps. Whatever was in that girl is definitely going to come out one day, and Lord knows that I shan't be here to witness it.
That was the last entry in James Winthrop's note. I have searched through the archives to find a mention of the village or even the girl in any pre-colonial or colonial document, and have found nothing. Anyway, at least we now know that the folklore was based in the reality of some village in eastern Nigeria. So, if you are from eastern Nigeria, who knows? That might be your village in the folklore. A child from the devil and the woman who slept with one. That has been our highlight on this episode. We will have more for you next time. The stories for this week's episode were brought to you by Adachukwu Omudiwe and narrated by yours truly, The Grizzly. You can follow me on Twitter at CrunchGrizzly. The sound was produced and mixed by Blue Magic OD of Magic City. Also check him out on Twitter at BlueMagic_OD. More info will be in the description. Tales from the Heart is a production of Creator Library and Publisher, a digital library and publishing platform that provides equitable access to research and knowledge resources. Check it out at www.thecreatorlibrary.com. All information are in the description. Thank you for listening. I will be with you next week. Bye bye for now. Damien is calling.